This is Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.
He breaks free. He's inside the 20, the 10, the 5.
A weekly in-depth look at the local high school sports scene.
Touchdown, Mercer County. Touchdown, Golden Eagles.
Sportsline is brought to you by your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business.
Get a launch of three at the gun. No good, and the Rockets have won the game. The Rockets head back to state.
By 6140 Running Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots.
A three at the gun is no good, and this game is over! The Tigers have won! They're going to celebrate! Purple and gold converging on the Don Morris Gymnasium floor! Unbelievable!
By Diamond Ag, your local ag retailer supplier, built from your local specifications with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville.
She throws the first three in a row for Rockridge!
The Rockets have won three state titles in a row in softball.
And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. And now, here's Jim Taylor and Ty Taylor with Sportsline.
It is the WRMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning, a tradition that started way back in 1979 with this great local radio station signed on. We're not in the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios today. I'll say that five times, Dale Jones Auctioneers. No, but he would appreciate us. We're on location at the State Farm Center today, of course, the site of the 2025 IHSA State Boys Basketball Tournament. The 1A state title game tips off at 1 o'clock. They've modified the schedule a little bit this year. We'll bring in Ty Taylor, talk a little bit about that, but at least the tip of the cap to Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios, because I was thinking about if we would have had a chance to visit with Aaron Britton, Nesto Hoops, the basketball expert. Dale Jones would have appreciated that one of his best friends, who we met last year, was the longtime official scorer of the St. Louis Cardinals. No kidding.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. I was talking with Nesto this morning. He unfortunately won't be here till around 12:30 today, so he's skipping out on the 4A third place game at 9:30 this morning. So we won't have Nesto Hoops on. We'll have a couple of good guests on, including IHSA Boys Basketball Administrator and Assistant Executive Director Chris Schwarz, who's a Moline grad, a former United High School principal, also the IHSA media man, is what I call him, Matt Troha. He'll join us. He's always a great guest. So Chris Schwarz will come on around 9:15. Troha will be on with us around 9:45 or so to talk all things state finals basketball, and we'll probably get into some funny kind of in-the-weeds stuff with Matt about just the anger that they always get skewed towards them at the IHSA.
By the way, you forgot to mention the local connection with Matt Troha, Monmouth College grad. His first media job was at the Daily Review Atlas, I think, covering the old Bi-County days of high school sports.
Chris Schwarz, also a Monmouth College grad.
Yeah. All right. That's awesome. The Harvard of the Midwest, as we like to say. I was thinking about it, you know, being at the state tournament, high school basketball, my favorite sport, and I was thinking about, I tweeted it out earlier this week, my first memory of the state tournament, 1979, UT Panthers playing at then, the Assembly Hall, what they called it then, and I remember Bruce Douglas that year was a freshman for Quincy. They were at the state tournament, and when I always think of number 25, everybody in Illinois thinks of Deion Thomas or Nick Anderson. I think of Bruce Douglas from Quincy High School, one of my favorite Illini players. So that's my first memory of IHSA state tournament basketball. Do you have one, Ty Taylor?
I think mine is 2006 in the, I guess it'd be the AA quarterfinals that year. It was Simeon and Derrick Rose against Glenbrook North and John Shire, and just kind of a game between two phenoms. And I would have been, you know, I think 8 years old at that time. That was at the Peoria Civic Center at Bradley, and I just remember how electric the crowd was for that game. And there's been so many great moments over the years, and I was actually talking about that with Matt Troha yesterday in between sessions, just about some of the great memories, because we were talking about Althoff and a couple of the great teams with Jordan Goodwin, who now plays for the Lakers, you know, 10 or so years ago when he was playing for Althoff. And, you know, that great semifinal game, I think, in 2015 between Whitney Young and Stevenson, which was Jahlil Okafor playing against Jalen Brunson, who are both NBA players today, that Brunson scored 56 points in the semifinal round in Class 4A. You know, the Jabari Parker, Simeon teams that won four state titles in a row with Kendrick Nunn, who's an NBA player too. Obviously, Manuel, and then the late 90s, early 2000s with that, you know, four straight state titles. There's been so many great moments, and I think even, you know, throughout the years, you've seen the crowds dwindle a little bit. But even this year, and we'll talk more about, you know, the state final games coming up later in the program, there's not really maybe, like, a big star this year, and there wasn't last year either. But when you come to an event like this, you really still get to see how much talent there is around the state. And there are some really great teams and some really great players. And I just think this is always such an enjoyable event. Mm-hmm. And there's always so much negativity, it feels like, with people complaining about, you know, the schedule, the game start late or whatever, or, you know, there's terrible crowds. But at the end of the day, like, we're all here to kind of celebrate, you know, interscholastic athletics. And I think the event at the University of Illinois at the State Farm Center has been so fun the past four seasons. I'm glad that they've extended that contract. And I think if you come to this or if you watch, really, to me, the takeaway is always just how much talent there is. Even, like I said, there isn't, like, the big, like, five-star recruit star. I guess there is, but he's a football player. De'Aaron Hill Jr., of course, who plays for Altoff. He's a heck of a basketball player, too. But still today, I think there should be four really fun state championship games, high-quality games with, you know, a lot on the line. Should be a lot of fun today.
Well, and I think that you can always debate, and there's always going to be debates about how do you do the Thursday-Friday schedule, right? And how do you do the third-place games? The IHSA got it right with playing the four state title games on the same day. There's no argument, I think, on that. But you can debate, and I don't know what the answer is. There's always going to be somebody complaining about how you set up Thursday and Friday and how you do the schedule there. And we can get into that a little bit with Chris Schwarz when he comes on today. But again, I love the fact that all four state title games are played on the same day. By the way, were you at the state tournament when Michael Jordan was there as a fan, watching his
yes,
kid play?
Yes, I remember that.
His kid played at Whitney Young,
correct,
right? So, yeah, so, you know, you can debate that, whatever you want. And like you said, I know there aren't those names the past couple of years when you mentioned John Shire and when you mentioned Derrick Rose and Jabari Parker. You know, we were blessed in that era with the multiple, you know, names that came through. And, you know, you can argue why attendance is what it is, but there's, you know, the dynamics of society today are a lot different than what they were in the 70s and 80s when basically this was the only thing going on. But I don't want to get into that. But I am thinking today a little bit about, you know, the rarity, and, you know, people are immediately going to default to, private schools. Well, you know, Altoff today has a chance to do something that I think is pretty unique. You know, win a state championship in football and basketball in the same school.
They also won the state title in boys soccer in the fall, too.
Holy smokes. Yeah, that's a triple crown.
Their head coach, Greg Lee, was talking in the statewide press conference on Thursday after they won in the semifinal round over Christ the King that, you know, basically their team, I think they have six football kids and four soccer kids that are basically kind of their rotation.
Wow.
So those kids all looking to win two state titles in the same school year. Plus, they won the girls' basketball state title last year.
Wow, what a run. But I was thinking about, you know, small school. I think 2006, 2007, Maroa Forsyth won football, basketball in the same school year. And then I think the last time before that, this is rare, you know, even when you talk about parochial schools, was the 88-89 school year. And Aledo was involved in that. The Green Dragons lost in the state title game to Carlisle in football, and then Carlisle won that school year in basketball, and Tom Michael was the big star player for them, who's now the athletic director at Eastern Illinois University. What do you think of the schedule with the modification this year? Do you like the setup? I think, you know, maybe, you know, those 1A semifinal games, you know, to me, start a little bit maybe too early in the day for Thursday, but like I said, I don't know how you configure all of these games to try to get them in over a three-day period and give everyone a two-day experience.
Right now, I think the way they changed it to this year is probably the best they could do. I mean, you can complain about the early 1A semifinal start times, but still, I mean, the final 3A semifinal game on Thursday night, which was the sixth game of the day, started at past 9:30. So, p.m., I mean. So, you have to start them early in the day if you're trying to get six games. And I think right now, maybe what they're looking at is there's a little bit too much time maybe in between sessions right now, or maybe they can cut down on that as they modify it maybe again for next season. But that first day is so tough with six games. So the way the schedule works is Thursday, now 1A, 2A, 3A, all the semifinals are played, so that's six games. The Friday session is the 1A, 2A, and 3A third-place games in the morning and early afternoon, and the evening session is the 4A semifinals. And then the final day, Saturday, here at 9:30, the 4A third-place game tips off, which is Rich Township against Evanston, and then the rest of the day, it's the state championship game. So at 1 o'clock, it's the 1A game between Eastland and Hope Academy. At 3 o'clock, the 2A state championship is Diet against Althoff. Diet is Chicago Public League School, and then the Chicago Catholic League is the two representatives in the 3A state title game, Brother Rice against DePaul Prep. That's a 6 o'clock tip-off tonight. And then the 4A game set for an 8 p.m. tip-off this evening between Warren and Bennett Academy.
And Rich Township right now, and the Wildcats. Do you like that nickname of Evanston, of course?
I like that. I like Rich Township's nickname, the Raptors, better, yeah, though. They have the Raptor mascot here. It doesn't look like the Raptor made the trip back from Richland Park.
There's not too many people here for the 9:30 third-place game in 4A today. So I really, really was hoping for Emmanuel Althoff showdown. What, you know, I was watching a little bit of the manual game on Thursday. Man, they couldn't buy a basket, and I was just shocked at the amount of turnovers on that team. What was your observation? I thought for sure we were headed for a Emmanuel Althoff showdown.
Well, Manuel, they ended up actually getting fourth place. They lost in the state semifinal round to Diet, then they lost to Christ the King in a third place game. In both days, I mean, they had 20 plus turnovers in both games, and you know, shot I think less than 30% from the floor in both games too. So they really struggled. I don't know if Dietrich Richardson was still a little sick, but he wasn't very active. The Postal Weight kid got in foul trouble too, and they had a lot of foul trouble against Diet on Thursday in the semifinal round. So I was surprised they lost too. I'm shocked they took fourth place, because I thought we were, you know, on the path for a, you know, state championship game and 2A showdown between Althoff and Manuel. But it's Diet who is getting in the state championship game. And the story with Diet is they've lost to one 2A team all season. It was Sherrard back in Moline.
Wow. So what do you think about the matchup in 2A then with Diet and Althoff?
I think Althoff is a pretty heavy favorite. They're just athleticism and their skill is just next level, I think, for Class 2A. So we'll talk more about the state title games coming up, but it looks like Chris Schwarz is starting to make his way up to us here for our talk with him. So we'll take a quick timeout on Sportsline. We're not from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios today. We're at the State Farm Center in Champaign, the site of the IHSA Boys Basketball State Finals. We'll come back and hear from IHSA Assistant Executive Director and Boys Basketball Administrator Chris Schwarz next at Sportsline on a Saturday morning here on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.
Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merit Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Looking for the perfect fit? 6140 Run in downtown Galesburg has you covered. From top brands like Hoka, Brooks, Saucony, Diadora, Wolverine, Red Wing, and more, we have the ideal shoes for running, walking, or everyday comfort. Right now, enjoy special savings on Birkenstock footwear. Don't miss out on this limited time offer to step into comfort and style. Visit 6140 Run at 185 West Main Street, downtown Galesburg. Your fee will thank you.
Are you ready for your teen to get their license? At Country Financial, they know it's scary when you see your kids back out of the driveway for the first time. If you know your young driver has the proper protection from Country Financial, it's a little easier. Contact your local Country Financial representative to chat about car insurance today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Policies issued by Country Mutual, Country Preferred, and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
It is the WMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning. Let's see. Me, an Alleman grad, Ty Taylor, a Mercer County grad, Augustana College grad also. I'm an SIU Edwardsville graduate. Our guest, Chris Schwarz, a Moline grad, right? Monmouth College grad. So we began the show talking about, you know, first memory of a state basketball tournament. We gave ours. Do you have, like, a first memory of coming to a state basketball tournament? Maybe you'd say, last year, my first year as a big shot IHSA administrator.
I actually have two. I was beneficial, you know, when I was in high school that we had two teams, and I actually had one chance when I was in junior high as well, where three of our Moline teams had made it down, and that was, of course, when it was in Peoria. So as a student, that was a great experience going down. I was not athletic enough to play basketball, okay, but I was a big fan and have remained a big fan of the game. But being able to go down and experience that, you know, with your classmates, you know, the March Madness experience and just the pageantry of it all was a great memory as a student. And then, yes, last year coming down with my family, being able just to observe, you know, be with Kurt Gibson and kind of talk with him and meet the administrators. And it's just, it's special in this building too and on campus here. And that'll always be a great memory, being able to come down last year as well.
So when you were a student then, was Frank Dexter the head coach?
Yes.
Then, or who was the, okay.
Yes.
Who spent time at Rock Ridge back in the day. So I guess, you know, your first observation, we were talking, I think there's always going to be debate on what the schedule on Thursday and Friday is. But I think nobody can argue that the four state championship games crowned on the same day Saturday, I think that's the best alternative for everybody. But, you know, you can argue what the rest of the schedule is. So your observation with this change so far this year with how the schedule's been modified?
Yeah, and I, you know, coming into it new and having a new schedule, I think can be beneficial in terms of just having an open mind of not having the experience of the prior schedule as an administrator. But I've heard from a few schools that positive feedback. They really enjoy having that two-day experience. And, you know, and it was schools that have made it to championship Saturday, and it was schools that, you know, had a third-place game, but they still had that two-day experience. And, you know, Thursday is a long day for everyone, no doubt, you know, with six games. But they're long days regardless. And, you know, I think when we go back and we, whether we do a survey, whether we, you know, just got the informal observations that we get and feedback from people, if it's good for students, I think that that's, you know, the primary goal. Like I said, it's going to be a long day and tiresome for our staff and for the staff here at the State Farm Center, no matter what. But if we can do something that's good for kids and gives them a better experience, I think that's the goal. So, yeah, I'm interested to hear feedback and a broader perspective on that.
Yeah, well, I think, like, you know, like you were touching on Thursday, with six games, it's hard to get everything in. But I think, you know, the one thing maybe that anyone could complain about is just it feels like that last game, whether it was the 2A third-place game, you know, in the past or now that final 3A semifinal, it just feels like it starts – you get so far behind schedule so fast, it feels like, you know. So looking at just the, I guess, timetable of things, do you think there's any way you could try to maybe get things moving along a little faster? I know it's hard, though, with, like, the TV timeouts, just the extended halftime, too, at the state finals.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's been new for me just in terms of working with our production crew and Matt Troha and just a great group. But I think that's probably something that'll be on the table just in terms of when we reflect on the schedule. You know, is there a way that we can, you know, maybe start a little bit sooner where, you know, the actual start time that's advertised is maybe closer because, you know, we're about 15, 16
right.
minutes behind what the actual, you know, start time says, which, again, TV, media, you know, that's a world that we have to coexist with and make sure that we're working well together. But, you know, I think that might be one area that we try to focus on where maybe we get it closer to the actual start time that's listed. But, Yeah, it's unpredictable too. You know, we going through on Thursday, we had to pivot a few different times on the start times and communicate that. And like I said, new experiences, but it gives opportunity to maybe make some changes where we can be a little bit more efficient with the time.
All right, looking ahead, like in the IHSA basketball landscape, I know there's one more full season without the shot clock being fully implemented. Then in 2026-27, it's coming. So with your work as the, you know, basically boys basketball administrator in the state, I mean, what kind of feedback have you got in terms of shot clock from schools, you know, both maybe, you know, installation of it and then also just feedback and kind of the experimental phase as you continue to use it here, you know, throughout, you know, last season into this season too?
We've had a lot of productive conversations, you know, around the state. And I think as a small school or former small school administrator and talking with some folks in West Central Illinois, I think that biggest piece is making sure that, you know, you have someone that is knowledgeable with the game and competent in terms of maybe a former official or retired official that could serve as that shot clock operator. And schools are starting to do that, and that's encouraging. The other feedback, too, is, you know, obviously depending on, you know, where you're at in the state and financial situations of schools and districts, you know, it's not so much the feedback I've heard about the initial installation, but it's more like, you know, hey, we have an auxiliary gym or we have an extra gym, kind of like we had at United High School, where are we really going to have to, you know, install a shot clock in this gym that we play only two games a year in, you know, for a holiday tournament? And so I think through our advisory committee and the NFHS will allow this, but you can make alterations a little bit to that rule where maybe it's a standalone shot clock or it's something that's mounted on the wall where it's not the full setup on the basket. But, you know, I think in terms of the time that schools have had to prepare and roll this out, we're hoping that time is going to be beneficial for them.
Then, kind of piggybacking on that, what did you make of the Eastland DuPec sectional title
Pecatonica
game? Yeah, Eastland Pecatonica sectional final game where, you know, it was a 1-0 at the end of one quarter, play 8-5 at halftime. A lot of debate after that game. I think much of it was just the sting of the season coming to an end. What was your reaction, I guess, to that? Sure you saw the Twitter sphere on that.
Yeah, I was a little shocked. I thought maybe it was a typo of the score after the first there. But, you know, I think anytime you get something that's drastic on either end, you're going to hear that feedback. And obviously with the state series and a bigger stage and a couple of great teams and great seasons on the line, like you had mentioned, when the stakes are higher like that, you're certainly going to hear that feedback. But with the shot clock, obviously, you know, coaches are going to have different philosophies in those situations, and they're going to have to adapt, and the play is going to change. And, you know, in that situation, obviously, you know, that's something that is going to alter kind of that scenario and that coaching philosophy. But, yeah, I was a little shocked to see the score. But, again, you know, as a coach, you're scheming within the rules that you have and the constraints that you have in that situation.
Yeah, and I'll just say it's one thing if they do it every game, and that the winner did not do that every game. They said this is our game plan today to try and win a game because we've lost to them twice. So I was a little bit surprised kind of at the pushback on that, I guess.
Yeah, me too. But, I mean, I know with the shot clock has always been such a debate, and now with it getting closer, I think people use that kind of as like a point to say this is why we need it. But, again, I think for Eastland it's one of those things where, like, they can point and say, look, we're playing for a state championship now, so you can complain all you want, but we got a chance to win the state title. And something I wanted to talk to Chris Schwartz about too is just kind of the way the IHSA basketball postseason is made up, with kind of the subsectional complex into the sectional round, where the subsectional basically splits into, you know, two separate regionals, where you saw this year in 2A, I think one of the big stories was down in the southern half of the state. I think it was the Chester Regional. The final teams in the AP poll number 1 and number 2, that was Althoff and Pinckneyville, played in the regional final round. And I know that's something where you've heard people talk about maybe wanting to look at if there was potential to see maybe the whole sectional seeded. So in terms of like the postseason picture where there's the subsectional and then the regional host, do you expect to see anything changing? Has there been any talk of any like postseason changes like that?
I you know, from what I understand is, you know, that's common in terms of from sport to sport where you get that situation. And that is tough where you have a geographical region that, you know, you have a lot of top teams either within that section or within the state, you know, that don't advance. And that kind of goes back to our, you know, I guess, core principle of, it, you know, it's based more on geography and not so much, you know, the straight seeds that you would see maybe in an NCAA tournament. You know, so I understand the frustration. You know, I can certainly see the point of view from, you know, some of these schools that, you know, they have a once-in-a-lifetime team or once-in-a-generation team, and then they have to go up and they have to face, you know, someone next door that is in a similar situation. So, you know, I think that's a common thing that we see year in and year out. And you know, it's certainly something that is brought up, and it's, you know, you have that side of the argument where people would like to see true seeds. But, you know, with our founding principles being based on geography, I would say that it would be hard for me to see that change. But, you know, certainly understand the argument there, too.
All right, we're going to take a quick break for the national anthem. Come back with more with Chris Schwarz on Sportsline after this on WRMJ.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29,
but I'm here. Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Looking for the perfect fit, 6140 Run in downtown Galesburg has you covered. From top brands like Hoka, Brooks, Saucony, Diadora, Wolverine, Red Wing, and more, we have the ideal shoes for running, walking, or everyday comfort. Right now, enjoy special savings on Birkenstock footwear. Don't miss out on this limited time offer to step into comfort and style. Visit 6140 Run at 185 West Main Street, downtown Galesburg. Your fee will thank you.
All right, back on Sportsline at the State Farm Center here in Champaign. The IHSA Boys Basketball State Finals rolling on. Ty Taylor, Jim Taylor. We're joined by IHSA Assistant Executive Director Chris Schwarz, also the Boys Basketball Administrator. So kind of going along with what we were talking about there, you expect, you know, still basically the true, like, regional site, sectional site to continue. Like, there's been no talk. I've heard some people say maybe you could see potentially the regional site going away with just higher seat hosting, but you think regional site's here to stay?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily see a drastic change being made, but, you know, we follow the same process in terms of, you know, meeting with our advisory committee after the season and taking that feedback. And, you know, we do take that feedback, you know, seriously. You know, we want to make sure that we're representing, you know, our school membership and, you know, moving in a direction where, you know, if it's something that membership is pushing or we feel that it is better for the kids and makes sense, but I don't necessarily see a drastic change like that. But like I said, I certainly understand the frustration and, you know, understand from that perspective, especially when, you know, March is the season of you know, college March Madness and it's true seeds. And it's just, again, it's a different philosophy, and I don't think people necessarily are aware of that, you know, how that geographic principle comes into play.
All right, so I know, like, in the football season, obviously there was kind of a fever pitch to this public-private talk with the football state championship games. Obviously, I think 7 of 8 of the state champions were, you know, private schools. Here today, there's a chance, you know, potentially where you could see 4 private school state champion winners. There's a representative in each of the class. I think the 3A game is private versus private with DePaul Prep and Brother Rice. Has there been much talk about that from the outside? I mean, I know football was just crazy that weekend with how that went, but what's kind of been the reaction, you know, this week from the IHSA perspective, you think?
You know, I, in my perspective, I think a lot of those things, they ebb and flow. And so I feel like, you know, from year to year, if you get, you know, like we had within the football state championships, you know, that feedback is going to be a little bit louder and more intense. But, you know, I do feel like when you, you know, go back and look, it certainly ebbs and flows, and you have your years where it's maybe heavy on the public side, maybe where it's balanced or heavy on the on the non-boundary side. But I think as an administrative staff, you know, we've been talking about things, you know, like the waiver and the waiver application process and how that could maybe, you know, changes to that lead to more competitive equity, maybe where you don't have teams that are moving down quite as much or being true multiplied and moving within the division that they're multiplied to. And, you know, we're thinking some changes to that waiver process might create that equity piece. And, you know, we feel like that makes sense. And, you know, that's what our staff has been looking at mostly.
Yeah, so there's the 1.65 multiplier that he's talking about where, you know, it can be waived sometimes if there's not the success factor, I guess. So speaking about that, I know the enrollment cycle has changed from 2 years to 1 year now. Speaking, though, about like that 1.65 multiplier specific changes, I know there was some talk about people saying, you know, that needs to be automatically applied to every private school every year. Has there been any talk of that, or do you think like for next school year it'll probably be kind of a similar type, you know, 1.65 based on, you know, the previous season success?
Well, the 1.65 would have to be a bylaw change, so that 1.65 number you know, wouldn't change unless there was a bylaw proposal and that was approved by the membership. But going back to the waiver application, and you know, if all the non-boundary schools are multiplied, but then you take away or you have a different process for that waiver, you wouldn't see as many teams that are able to be waivered down a division, and they would stay in that division that they were multiplied to. And I feel like that's probably step one within the process. You know, I think we have a board meeting that is going on currently, and I think those are some discussions that they're having this morning. Whether or not we see any movement out of that board meeting remains to be seen, but like I said, it's definitely been something that we've been discussing and put a lot of work in reflecting on and trying to figure out how we can, you know, improve the system that we have.
Well, and I was going to ask, you know, we were talking a little bit about the setup for the state tournament series with, you know, sectional complex, subsectional seeding. You know, one of the debates is and geography is geography. So it's tough to kind of maybe shift some of the teams from this area to that area. Is there a science to that? Because people will say, you know, you're going after this part of the state again where these two teams have to play in the regional or the subsectional. I mean, is there a way that can be done, or is it just geography is geography and it's tough to make those shifts, I guess, in some of those where you see those, like he mentioned, this year where you see a lot of really good teams, their season comes to an end basically at the regional level because that area of the state has so many good teams.
So every 3 years we take a look at some of those boundary lines that, you know, kind of divide the subsectionals. You know, like you were stating, geography, so there can't be too much change just in terms of, you know, whether you draw the line this way or draw the line that way, you're still going to have some of those outlier teams that are maybe kind of out in the middle of nowhere in terms of, you know, like a rural school, where that might impact, you know, every three-year cycle in terms of what subsectional they're in. But, you know, a lot of the schools that are, you know, densely populated and within a certain area, you know, in terms of geography, it's hard to make any sort of movement where teams are maybe shifting from one to the other. But it is every 3 years that we take a look at those lines, you know, and try and, you know, redraw and see if there's, you know, something makes sense for a team to maybe shift from this subsectional to another subsectional.
All right. One of the things I really like to follow is from the National Federation of State High School Associations, the CEO, executive director is Carissa Niehoff, and she does a lot of these, like, I call them think pieces or editorial pieces, and she did one earlier this month, and I'm going to quote couple of lines from this piece. 10 state associations are now allowing at least one transfer from school to school with immediate eligibility, and there's a push in a few states for unlimited transfers during a student's high school career. So we call that what? Trickle down from collegiate sports, and we call that club sport thinking too, where kids can go from team to team. Is that something that the IHSA is being pressured on? I know we talk about these eligibility rulings all the time. How do you react to that, I guess, because that's something we're hearing more and more about, and especially the you know, there's a push in a few states for unlimited transfers during a student's high school career. Holy smoke. So what does Chris Schwartz, how does he react to that?
I mean, my personal opinion, I don't think that's good for high school sports. You know, if you allow a student to transfer, you know, unlimited amount of times, you know, I'm not sure from an administrative perspective how you keep track of that. From a school personnel perspective, you know, I think that would be a nightmare just in terms of the sending school, receiving school. For academic purposes, it's not good. You know, we're talking, you know, strictly about sports and focusing on that. But when you look at the academic perspective, that's not good for a kid to transfer multiple times. You know, even if it's, you know, because their family's moving, that's hard on a student. That's hard on a student athlete. And to imagine or try to have all those credits transfer over, I just don't think we're setting our students up for success if we allow something that drastic. It is interesting to see the national landscape and see some of the states that are moving to that. Talking with individuals within those offices in other states, you know, they feel handcuffed. And, you know, I think that's challenging as an association to try to keep track of those sort of things, where students are going. And, you know, you have mega teams that are, and I think that encourages recruiting as well. So I don't see how any of that would be a positive for our student athletes, for our schools, and just for athletics and Illinois in general.
All right. So one other thing I want to bring up. He's like, oh, great. So let's go to Springfield. And I'll read the first line of a story I saw this week. An Illinois House committee advancing a bill Wednesday that would give high school student athletes the right to participate in both school-sponsored teams and non-school teams in the same sport at the same time. So I'm assuming you saw some of the headlines with that. And, you know, really, I'd say the last 5 years, you've kind of seen a little bit of a push where there's, you know, down in Springfield at the state capitol, there's always something being proposed legislatively as, you know, in response to something that's going on with high school athletics. So what about something like that?
You know, it's kind of, in my personal opinion, it's the same stance where I just don't see how in a world where we are trying to maybe reduce the amount that students are doing in terms of training, being active. You know, we're always trying to protect students' interests just in terms of not having them overworked. I don't see how this would be a positive for students if they are allowed to essentially play on two different teams in the same season, or, you know, play basketball on this certain team, you know, for your school team, but then I can, you know, be on this travel team for a different sport. That's just not going to be good for students' bodies. It's not going to be good for students who are still developing. You know, if you throw baseball in there, you know, once they get out of the high school realm with pitch count and things like that, and some of the things that we have built in to try to protect, you know, pitchers specifically, you know, is that student, does he, you know, the travel coach have their best interest? I mean, there's so many factors that go into that where, again, I don't see how that would be a positive. I know there's a lot of great people in Springfield and across the state that introduce these bills, and I'm sure that there is a way of thinking where they think it's a positive. For me, I struggle with seeing where those positives are. And again, just from a perspective of student safety and development. And can we just let them be kids too? You know what I mean? Like, you still have all the things outside of sports, you know, with school and social activities and just part of being a kid and growing up too. You know, there's only so much time in a day.
All right, before we let Chris Schwartz get back to administering the great IHSA boys basketball state finals, I know, you know, coming up at the end of the season, I think normally in April you have the basketball advisory committee meeting. I think it's kind of an annual thing. And we talked about earlier, you know, obviously I think the big story in terms of the change to the basketball landscape is the shot clock coming in full in the 2026-27 season. So just talking about, you know, that advisory meeting you have coming up, I mean, do you expect any other kind of big changes or big noteworthy things to come out of maybe that meeting?
I know we'll definitely discuss subsectionals. You know, I've heard from a number of schools, and we kind of talked about it earlier, where, you know, we and me specifically, we take that feedback seriously, so we want to make sure we're doing our due diligence and talking with the advisory committee, you know, about subsectionals and the philosophy. And, you know, again, heard various schools, different parts of the states, different classification. I mean, you know, all sizes too. So it's definitely something that I think comes up year to year. But in terms of the shot clock, you know, I would expect or hope that we could maybe have some clearer language on, like I was talking about, where you have some of those situations with an auxiliary gym and maybe having, you know, a shot clock on a tripod or mounted to a wall rather than the full brackets, you know, just to help schools out, you know, in terms of the financial crunch that you feel when you're installing those things. But yeah, this is a great experience. You know, I appreciate you guys having me up here. I'm still pinching myself a little bit. I mean, it's amazing. It's an amazing atmosphere, and I'm just, you know, extremely blessed and fortunate to have a small part in it.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, and I know, you know, about the, you know, state of interscholastic athletics will always be important to me, and I like your, you know, your backstory, because you've been able to see it from two distinct lenses, which I think is pretty important. You know, you're a kid that grew up in the Metro Quad Cities, familiar with, you know, big school sports, and then, you know, traveled your way through education, small school, you know, being at United. So I think it's important to have that balance. How has that helped you think, in your judgment of this position? Because those are two distinct lenses, I really think.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I've always said I've just been at the right place at the right time, and I'm, you know, very fortunate to have had the experience that I've had. But I think it helps with those conversations if I'm talking to a school administrator from the suburbs, or, you know, administrator from Southern Illinois in a small rural town, or good old West Central Illinois, and talking to some of my friends that are there in those schools. You know, I think it helps just to have that perspective and empathy as well when just listening to some of the either suggestions or improvements, or, you know, whatever the case may be, why they're calling the office. They're looking for help. They're looking for answers. They're looking for clarification. And I just think it helps with those conversations, you know, to communicate with them.
All right. The last thing I was going to say, I'll remember when you got the job, Kurt Gibson told me, hey, I'm like, yeah. He's like, hey, that I'm with Chris Schwartz today. I think we're going to get a bass fishing sectional over at Lockendam Pool 17. What do you think of that? I'm like, well, they finally got somebody in to bring us the bass fishing sectional to Mercer County. You still oversee that, right?
Yes.
Is there any, by the way, now, are there any changes for this year's state tournament series in bass fishing? Are there more regional sites or sectional sites or something like that?
We're going to need another hour.
This is what everybody wants to hear.
Fishing, heck yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That's what my dad wants to hear, man.
So, yeah, it's exciting, you know, changes in bass fishing landscape. We're moving to regionals, which is a great thing because we've just had the interest with more schools getting on board to where we can grow that. So we'll have regional tournaments. Those regionals will feed into six sectionals throughout the state. Those sectionals will be some of the bigger lakes. For example, another one would be Mississippi River Pool 13 in Savannah. So, you know, we have some exciting sectionals throughout the state. And then Lake Shelbyville is our new state tournament site, which very excited to get on Lake Shelbyville. Had a chance to do a couple site visits there in the fall. And, you know, the city of Shelbyville and Shelbyville High School are excited to have it there. So, yeah, a lot of changes in bass fishing that I'd love to talk about.
So I'm the only person that's interviewed all three people involved in state IHSA bass fishing: Dave Ganaway, Kurt Gibson, and Chris Schwartz. Ha, 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 ha. All right. By the way, we have common friendship. Love Sean Temple at WRAM and WMOI. I know you're on that radio station and your role at United. So tip of the cap to Sean Temple.
Absolutely.
And I know you love the Lincoln Trail Conference, and that's where Mercer County was for many years, too. And long live the Red Storm. And Jeff Witsit's one of our favorite people, too, because we traveled the youth baseball
with
days
Jack
together.
Yeah,
yes,
Jack
the youth baseball circuit. There's a story that Mr. Witsit likes to tell about, I think it was Jack, because Jack used to switch hit, right?
Yes.
And he talks about how, you know, he hit a, as a lefty, he hit the left center gap shot for a double, and then the next time up, he switched, and then he hit the right center gap for a double. And yeah,
that's a good player. Yeah.
He was a great player, for sure.
All right, Chris Schwartz, IHSA Assistant Executive Director, Boys Basketball Administrator as well. Appreciate the time today. Sorry, he was here for the whole first quarter, so appreciate it. Should be a fun day the rest of the day. So really appreciate you coming on and talking with us,
Thank
man.
Thank you. Thank you. You guys do a great job. I appreciate it.
All right, we'll come back with more on Sportsline after this on WRMJ.
You finally have your dream home. Now you need the right insurance to protect it. Because when it comes time to file a claim, you don't want any surprises. Talk to a Country Financial representative to find out if you have the right protection. They can help you understand your options and select coverages to meet your needs.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Home insurance policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company, Country Casualty Insurance Company, or Country Preferred Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
It is the WMJ Sports Line on a Saturday morning on location at the State Farm Center, site of the 2025 IHSA Boys Basketball State Tournament. Good to have Chris Schwarz on with us. And he just said that we were talking about fishing, and he referenced Jason Kirby of all people. Said one of the most skilled, I think he said, did he say skilled
anglers?
All right, awesome. All right, and this is like we've been talking about the Harvard of the Midwest, another Monmouth College graduate. We talked to Chris Schwarz and now Matt Troha, and I always like to begin our conversation. Again, his first ever paying job in the media was in Monmouth at the Daily Review Atlas. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes,
well, sir. Do you remember the first game? I think we probably asked you this before or not.
Yeah, I do, actually. It was, what was West Central called before they were
West
Central?
It was either Union or Southern.
It was Union. Yes, I covered
a Union. Old Bi-County days?
Yep, I covered a Union football game. It was crazy. There was a guy named Pat Lynch who was at Monmouth. He was a senior, I think, when I was a freshman, and he lived next door to me. And so he graduated, and then that my sophomore year, I went out to cover this week one game, and he was the head coach of Union, and I had no idea he was there, no idea he was the coach. So it was kind of one of those, what are you doing here, kind of things. I do, so, yeah, I covered a lot of fun games.
Well, curious you bring that up. So you started, I'm curious, your first year with the IHSA was what year?
2008-09, I believe.
All right, so I was thinking about this today. From your lens, how much has the media landscape changed? Like, so when I first started, I started in 1990, so I remember, you know, press row was press row,
right?
When you talked about, like, daily newspapers and things of that nature. So from your time in the IHSA, how much has that changed?
You know, it's changed significantly. You know, I know people tell me kind of about the old days where, you know, every radio station in the state was here, and it certainly wasn't that when I got here.
Only one here is here right now. What are the call letters again?
when I got here, there was still probably 8 or 9 stations covering a lot of the tournament, and that's continued to drop. There's still a lot that come and cover their teams.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and as you've already alluded to, some of that daily coverage is – continue to drop, but the number of the Instagram social media influencers continues to rise dramatically, especially in basketball and football. And you know, I think people have mixed emotions on that. I think it's cool that, you know, I know kids are gonna, that's where they live, right? So they're gonna see a lot of that content. A lot of it is really well done too. So you know, I hope they can help fill some of that void that we've lost with some of our traditional
media. Well, and
media.
I think the example of that is Aaron Britton with Nesto Hoops and mm-hmm. the cult following he's created and the basketball expert he is. And he covers the sport, you know, almost 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean,
it's unbelievable. Yeah, I tell him he needs to start a podcast or whatever. Right? If he put out more stuff, we would all we'd all continue to eat it up. So I know he doesn't have enough hours in the day, but.
So your storyline when you watch this state tournament this weekend, now for us small school wise, I like the, you know, the Mary Henson connection to, you know, being a Lanark native. She met Lou working. He was working as a, you know, basically had a summer job at the Jolly Green Giant plant in Lanark youngster, and that's how they met. Still connect, you know, she lives in the Champaign-Urbana area, but I know really fond of her roots in Lanark, Illinois. That's a neat story to me because they're playing on Lou Henson Court, so that'd be pretty special for Eastland. Any other storyline kind of stand out for you?
Yeah, I think having Ronnie Fields and kind of what his name and what that has meant in Illinois basketball, to have him back coaching is pretty neat. You know, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. You know, 4A, the 4A storyline is, I think everybody said going in that Mike Ellis from Evanston and Gene Heidkamp from Bennett are probably the two best coaches in the state that haven't won a state championship. So both of them, you know, they faced off last night. So one of them was going to get to the title game and see if they can get over the hump tonight. you've got an all-Catholic league final. I don't know how excited people are about that. But, I think a lot of it's just watching the players emerge and just kind of, you know, seeing who steps up and kind of puts on a show. The Jackson Davis last night was incredible. Yeah. I don't know if you guys were here for that one. I've heard a lot about him, and they had an up-and-down season, and then you saw him last night, and you were like, okay, yeah, he's different. He's a next-level kind of kid. So
my thing with Matt Traw is always joke with him that he's like the president of the Altoff Catholic fan club, right? We all know. No, I'm kidding. But I know, like, with the football season, we talked about this with Chris Schwartz a little bit, just kind of the fever pitch that the whole public-private, like, debate or anger was. With that, though, I think, like, this week, too, and even, I think, over the state final football weekend, I was there, too. I mean, I just think sometimes, like, some of the anger, one, is misplaced because, like, you sit here and you watch, and it's like, for me watching Altoff, for example, it's like, I don't know how your number one takeaway can't just be like, wow, like, look at this Deer Hill junior kid that is just an absolutely incredible athlete. I mean, so for you, I know you deal with a lot of the media stuff with the IHSA. So just how do you kind of handle, like, all of that? It felt like a lot of negativity and, like I said, anger over the football weekend. And has there been anything similar, I mean, this weekend with the – I know there's been some private school success here in basketball too.
Yeah, so I guess I would say this is that, you know, early on in my career, I took every single thing to heart, and I took it personally, and I wanted to fix it. I kind of realized pretty quickly that that's not a good way to live, and not going to be sustainable. So I let it kind of flow off a little bit. But when it comes from our schools, and it really did a lot after football, then that's different. That's different than, you know, just Joe whoever on Twitter or Facebook. And I think it has exposed some flaws in our. In our waiver process, and ironically, our board meets. They hold an annual board meeting every year here on site, just because our whole board's here. So that's where we hold our March one. So they're meeting this morning, and I think there'll probably be some action out of that meeting that maybe fixes some of those things, and you know, probably improves competitive equity a little bit with schools competing probably in the classes where they belong. So that'll be an interesting thing to follow. You know, next week we'll have some information on that once it's finalized. But yeah, you know, I see both sides of it. I was a Catholic school kid, K through 12, and Joliet Catholic, and obviously a lot of football success. And some of it concerns me. You know, Joliet Catholic, for example, in football, their enrollment continues to go down, but the type of kids they have in their football program are not the kind of kids they have at Mantino and other 4A schools. So, you know, we do have to find a way to kind of bridge those gaps and kind of get teams where they belong and, you know, competing at the light competition.
Yeah, because I think there is a balance. Like, I know, talking about football specifically, like, I think basically everyone would say that, like, Altoff in 1A, you know, they probably should not have been classified in 1A with the type of talent they had and everything. But, like, you know, there are some private schools like, you know, Newman and Sterling, I think, is a true small school. Like, Jacksonville Route, I feel like, is one of those schools, too, that are, they, you know, they play the small school schedule all year. So I think there is kind of, like, a delicate balance, but I think it's probably kind of hard to find that, because I don't think with private schools it's one size fits all. Because I think even like Hope Academy, when they play a small school schedule basically all year, I think there isn't a whole lot of complaints of them being a 1A team. So it's hard, I think, to kind of find that mix, right?
100%. And there's been a lot of talk among the membership. The multiplier right now is 1.65, and there's been a lot of talk, I think, because some of the private school enrollments are going down, that the response should be just raise the multiplier. But I agree with you. I come from that school of thought that I don't know that that's a one-size-fit-all, that Jacksonville Route and Yorkville Christian should be treated the same. They draw from very different sizes of communities around them. And so I think that hopefully I'm confident that we're going to be able to put some ideas together, maybe to make that a little more dynamic and maybe take into account success, maybe take into account, the population you draw from, rather than just say bump it up to two or bump it up to three or whatever that might be. All the schools are definitely not created equal in that regard.
Well, and I look at, just you personally, what's interesting for you, because I know you now have kids coming through basically, I think, junior high into high school, and they go to Hayworth. And it's always interesting then when you have kids involved, and kind of how you view this whole process. What's that kind of been like for you now? So what Hayworth, is they in the heart of the Illinois Conference?
They are, yes.
I mean, then you grew up in the Joliet area and went to Joliet Catholic. That's completely different than a public school like Hayworth that's downstate. So what's like that been like for you, I guess?
I try to kind of separate that and not get too, overly involved in terms of how Hayworth falls in it. But it's hard not to go through and watch your kids and see that difference, the small school, large school difference. And, our forefathers at the IHSA 15 years ago, when they went to four classes, I don't think they envisioned 1A and 2A basketball like this weekend, of having three teams from Chicago, one team from Peoria, mm-hmm. one team in Effingham. I don't think that was the intended goal. So I think that's something we have to take into account, because that's something, until you've experienced some of that, the small school, you really don't necessarily understand the difference. And then when you see it in person, it really is different. I was telling people last night that when those 4A games tipped off, like, having watched 1A basketball year, it feels like a different sport. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does. I don't know if I even answered your question, but
to me, it's it's not, there's, it's just not an easy answer, because it's
always
been debated forever, and I don't even care what the new process, if there's something new that comes out of this meeting today, they're still going to be, it's not going to be perfect.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. But when people sit here and say separate public private, I'll never, ever, ever be supportive of that. I mean, I just think that's, when people, and a lot of people say that in the heat of the moment. And when I talk about enrollment, I still love, now this was a football only thing, I still love the day of football enrollment, basically where it was the equation for everyone, where basically it kind of equated to the average enrollment of the schedule you play.
I'm a big proponent of that as well.
And I like that, whether you're public or private.
Yeah, that was actually something that we surveyed our membership on maybe back in January, because I could definitely say that within our office, there's a lot of us who believe that would help alleviate some of the problems in football. And there's, depending on where you're at in football, there's a lot of different issues, right? There's scheduling issues, there's conference issues. Football controls too much of what's going on, for better or worse. But I'm with you on the football enrollment. I think that could help alleviate some things. And I don't want to say we're going to push that, but I think we're going to really ask our schools to kind of study it and consider it, because I do think it might help.
Well, and the other thing that's interesting for me all the time is, when we talk about the bylaw amendment process, it's a member-derived school, right? Our member-derived organization, that if you want change, you can be part of the process and say, I'm going to, propose this bylaw amendment.
Yep.
And it seems like football every year, there's a bylaw amendment, but what was it, 2 years ago, or was it, I think 2 years ago, that football ad hoc committee that was formed, that's on top of the football advisory committee. Now, is there anything brewing as it relates to that, or are these just kind of ongoing conversations that the IHSA has?
We have this ad hoc football committee that's been meeting for the last year. There were a lot of people who had hoped they were going to bring forward a bylaw last year. They didn't quite get there. But I think that next year they will. And what they've really been looking at is if we were to add some teams to the playoffs in each of the classes, you know, would that alleviate some of the issues and the drive for five, you know, kind of scheduling issues? So I think they will have – they're looking at several different things, though, in terms of, you know, would we – if we added teams to the playoffs, would we still play a nine-game schedule? Would we play an eight-game schedule? If we were to do that, when would we start the season? Would we start it earlier? We've been looking at a lot of states because we do more now in the summer with football than we used to. I think there's a belief that maybe the acclimatization doesn't need to be as long, and there's a lot of states who just – we'll open up, have 1 week of practice, and then you're right into your first game week. So there's a lot of moving pieces with football in terms of the scheduling and all of that. So I think they're just trying to make sure they do all their due diligence and kind of, you know, cross all their T's, dot their I's. But I would expect they will have something in front of our membership this winter. Like I said at the beginning, we've seen a ton of proposals in football. None of them have passed because – depending on where you are and where your program is at, your issues, they differ. So it's hard to find a consensus.
So whatever amendment or whatever that's, you know, brought forward, it would have to be, like you said, basically voted on by the member schools, right, for it to pass. Is that
correct?
Right?
Yeah, it would have to get support first at the town hall meetings, and then if it did that, it could get to the ballot, and then it would come down to that membership vote. Yep.
So my question then, in this whole debate, is it just math? So people aren't going to be mad if, like, the equation needs to be only 25% of non-boundary schools can win state titles, and then we'll be happier. What do you think the moving target is to satisfy people?
I've always thought that's a terrible. I do not like the argument of the private schools make up this percentage of our schools and they should win. Because that, you know, at that point, shouldn't we say that? Well, we have. Some of our private schools are Lutheran, and some are this and that, so they should win with some percentage. And some of them are like U-High, and they're university based, so they need to win 1%. You know, I think people just want to play like competition. I think that's what it comes down to. You know, they don't want that 35-0, that once in a generation team from their town to go play a 10-20 private school who then beats them by 40 points. You know, they just want the level of competition. And you know, there are certainly people, I should say schools, who are separate, and that's the end all be all. But I think for the most part, a lot of people are very level-headed about it. And again, if they feel like, hey, we were able to compete, we were right there with this team, this private school, and you know, they beat us, or, you know, I think most people are good with that. But I think it's the like competition piece.
I think, speaking back kind of more about, like, basketball now, as we've been talking about, you know, just the state finals here in, you know, Champaign. I think it's, what, the fourth year of it back here. Just what do you think of kind of the environment? And also, you got the new schedule this year. We talked about this with Chris Schwartz a little bit. Just what do you make of kind of the new schedule you have going through the day here? The four state title games, of course, coming up later today.
Yeah, I was a pretty big fan of the previous schedule, so I'm kind of taking a wait and see here this year. But, you know, like you said, it's all relatively new regardless, so I think we'll continue to look and potentially adjust and tweak. You know, this Saturday has been a lot of fun for the last 3-4 years, and so I'm hoping it builds again today, and we have great energy in the building all day, playing all the four championship games back-to-back-to-back. I think that has been really cool and really fun. So I think no matter what we do moving forward, and personally I really like the one weekend. I think it's just better. So those two elements are important to me. You know, I would be a proponent of that, and maybe – how it all falls in between there, you know, I think there's probably still room for improvement.
So the one thing I wanted to ask Matt before he leaves, so, you know, the evolution of being a professional, and you said when you took this job how many ever years ago, you know, when you first started, you said, you know, some of the stuff you'd see on social media or whatever, you'd take it personal and you'd say, how dare you. So give me a story like, young Matt Troha with the IHSA, that's something said, you know, IHSA, give me a random school, the IHSA, well, so Addison Driscoll, they don't exist anymore, right? So I'm like, I'm going to tweet this out. Matt Troha, every year he wants Addison Driscoll to win. So, like, What like really ticked you off like early in your career? That's you know if you can remember anything like you know, really drove you nuts.
Yeah, my brain is so fried right now. I can't really think of any. You know what? It was mostly the Edgy Tim posters at that time. that was the message boards when the message boards were going crazy. Some of those people
and Mrs. Straw saying, "Matt, don't read that Edgy Tim board today."
Yeah, you know what? But one time, you know, we'd go to this annual summer meeting for the NFHS. And we were out in Boston and, like, at a Red Sox game, and I think I tweeted out something of that or posted on Facebook. And somebody on Edgy Tim, like, posted that, and they were just like they're using Metro Haas, using government funding to go on a vacation to Boston.
Fire him.
I was like, what? What are you talking about? So, yeah, I'd like to find that guy still.
And then I to go off that, too, I've always been interested. We talked about earlier kind of sometimes the negativity you have to deal with just, like, being kind of the forefront of, like, the media aspect of the whole IHSA, thing. So what is maybe, if you can remember a specific example, the stupidest thing you think someone's got mad at you about in terms of just, like, because I can't imagine how many stupid things people have said, like, to you about
back,
stuff.
He's going to come back 2 hours later and say, here's every
10 minutes, that changes. you know, I don't know if I have a stupidest ever, but I can tell you that when I learned very early in my job, I started a folder in my Outlook that I called dumb emails.
I'd love to see that someday.
And, my plan was I was going to compile them all through my career, and then when I retired, I was going to write a book with the responses to them that I would have liked to have given. Now, again, that feels like too much time and energy now in negativity to go do that. But, you know, just another social media example, though. Just yesterday, I don't know if you guys know Rodney Knupel from Wharton.
Yeah,
Rodney's a buddy of mine, but he spent, I don't know, he put out 150 tweets about the tournament yesterday and how awful it was. And I'm just like, man, you're spending a lot of time and energy on this. You know, and I'm going to have a conversation with him and just be like, because I want to know, like, why aren't you here? Because this clearly means a lot to you, and whatever.
But I mean... That's, to me, so relative to the experience, because I'll tell you, if Rock Ridge or Sherrard or Mercer County or Orion was here, I would be stoked that one of our local teams is playing, and I don't care what the rest of the attendance was to see the local kids I cover get a play on this great court and get a play in this great environment. So, you know, so, and that's, to me, those type of complaints, it's like, you know, I look at body of work, and I come to the state tournament every year. I don't care if it's in Peoria. I don't care if it's in Champaign. And I just think of the memories and the players and the teams and the experiences. It's to me, I still think it's, you know, money well spent to come to this.
Well, yeah, and you hit a lot of points there. But obviously, right, people have changed. Society has changed, you know. It's not unique to Illinois that high school sports aren't as well attended as they were in the 70s and as they were in the 50s and as they were in the 30s. You know, there's a lot more going on in life, and people have a lot more things and, you know, choose to spend their time and their money differently. And, you know, again, it's strange to me sometimes that people spend so much time and energy on social media telling us that attendance sucks at your tournament. And it's just like, well, if you care that much, why are you not here instead of sitting at home and tweeting about it? But that's another side story. But you're right. The tournament attendance, right? It's driven by the schools that make it, and more so than, right, those old fans have kind of turned over. Your general fan isn't what it once was, right? Where you just have people coming to watch people like you and I might still if we weren't involved with this. But there's just less of those people out there. So it very much is driven by the schools that make it. And you know, hopefully Champaign-Urbana was excited to get the tournament here, and I think they've supported it well. And you know, the fact that Illinois is not playing today, hopefully that'll mean a few more people will willing to come out and see this, because it's a special and a unique event. And you know, yeah, there's nothing like high school sports.
Yeah, well, I agree that it's like a great event, like with what you said too. And I think, and we talked about this earlier too, and I know, like, yesterday you and I were talking about it a little bit, just some of, like, the great, you know, moments and great players and great teams that have played, whether it's been in Peoria or Champaign. And I think today there's a potential for four really fun, you know, state championship games. And you touched on last night, like, that Warren and Rich Township game was so much fun and yes. such high-level basketball where, I mean, still I think, like you were just touching on there, it's such a, I think, a big deal too. And I think, like, the state title crowds, like, for this afternoon into this evening should be pretty good, I would think, because I think since you've gone to one weekend, the Saturday crowd has always been pretty good, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And, yeah, so, yeah, we're hoping that, yeah, there'll be a lot of energy in the building all day and good games. But, yeah, I mean, it's out of our control and yeah.
Well, and then I'll just say, and we were talking to this about Chris Schwarz a little bit, that we can debate and argue about the Thursday-Friday schedule, and I don't know if there's a true answer of how you do it, but Saturday is never going to change, I don't think, in terms of playing the four state title games on the same day. It's how you configure the rest of the tournament. That's the million-dollar question, right? I mean, because I think nobody's going to be happy whatever the situation is there, trying to configure all those games over 3 days, but still making sure the four state title games are played on Saturday.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's a lot to fit into a day, and when you add TV, you know, which we're lucky to have, a lot of states that's gone away, and it's been important to us to keep it on there. It's a 100-year tradition probably of being on television. So, but that adds to your game times too, and that makes it a little more difficult as well.
I can't think of anything else other than maybe next year if we have Matt on again, we'll say get out your 100 top mean tweets and we'll just have Matt Traw.
Bring the laptop up here.
100 mean tweets.
And I just want to say that Matt Traw, he's got his Altoff blue blazer on for the Crusaders today. So that's all I got to say, man. We, of course, I'm just kidding, but I know that's what people think all the time is that everybody wants the private schools to win all the time. And it's like we were talking, we were joking with Matt on yesterday afternoon that the script writers, they, of course, have Altoff Catholic. He said he told the script writers not to let them win the state title, but here they are playing for it today. So.
Well, and like you said, though, too, I think four compelling and intriguing games coming up for the state title games today. I think great entertainment, and I think good storylines in each of those games, too.
Absolutely. Matt Troll, I appreciate the time, sir. Have a good rest of the day and the IHSA boys basketball state finals, the final day. What, last year you said best swishes to the audience, right?
I did, didn't I? Best swishes.
All right, we'll come back with more on Sportsline after this.
Looking for the perfect fit? 6140 Run in downtown Galesburg has you covered. From top brands like Hoka, Brooks, Saucony, Diadora, Wolverine, Red Wing, and more, we have the ideal shoes for running, walking, or everyday comfort. Right now, enjoy special savings on Birkenstock footwear. Don't miss out on this limited time offer to step into comfort and style. Visit 6140 Run at 185 West Main Street, downtown Galesburg. Your feet will thank you.
Building relationships, supporting the community and service. These are the things Country Financial stands for. We're neighbors who lend a helping hand and support the fabric of our community, including charitable organizations, sports, financial education, and civic organizations. Since we're already neighbors, let's get together and chat to talk about the things that are important to you and how we can help you protect them. See your local Country Financial representative today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi. I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
All right, Jim Taylor back on the WMJ Sports Line with Ty Taylor. We're at the State Farm Center. I like Matt Troha even more because he told me off the air he said, hey, I got in my car one night and you were doing overnight commodity prices. Yeah, Matt Troha. All right. So, again, we're not in the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios, but Terry Tracy is spinning the dials, as Jack Buck used to say on the Cardinal Radio Network. Dale Jones would appreciate that. Can I be like a complete homer here and complain about something?
Go right ahead.
I'm sorry, but Rylan Carton is a first-team All-Stater now. I was going to correct the headline. You had him as second-team, but apparently the Illinois Basketball Coaches Association, and I love those people. But if you score 45 in a regional championship game and put up the numbers you put all year, I don't know how Rylan Carton wasn't a first-team All-Stater. And my goodness, how was Landon Bull not a first-team All-Stater with the schedule they played and the body of work he has on his resume with his 4 years, including this year? Now, I know they lost in the regional championship game. Still high recognition, being honored second-team All-State IBCA, but I was a little, and again, we cover these kids all year. I was a little bit perturbed, I guess, but still good recognition. What do you think?
Yeah, I really thought that both would be first-team All-Staters, but I was shocked that Rylan Carton wasn't with the year he had. I mean, he scored over 700 points. Sherrard played a really tough schedule, won 30 games, got to a sectional final, and lost to Manuel. I mean, I really thought that Rylan would be a first-team All-Stater. And beat Diet too, right? Who's, like we mentioned earlier, Sherrard's the only 2A team to beat Diet, who's playing for the 2A state title later. But yeah, so Rylan Carton, Landon Bull each get second-team All-State honors from the IBCA. Caleb Kunico of Rockridge, a third-team selection. And then Sherrard's James Blackwell and Orion's Kyler Owen, special mention honors as well. So really cool that all five of those local players that we got the privilege to cover this season all get All-State recognition. All five very, very well deserved.
Yeah, and you just you think about, you know, that when we always talk about like the postseason journey and the tournament trail, when your team gets eliminated, you think they haven't played forever, right? I mean, it's only been over a little over a week that Sherrard hasn't played a game, and man, you just look at the opportunity in that game against, you know, Peoria Emanuel that Friday where they had a chance. And, you know, unfortunately they met Emanuel on one of Emanuel's better nights in the postseason because, like I said, maybe the atmosphere at Sherrard that Friday night, maybe that impacted them this week coming down to the State Farm Center. Maybe they wanted to play in that type of environment in a small school gym. What do you make of these games today? Now, I know Eastland and Hope Academy, they're playing a rematch from a game that was played, you know, earlier this year on Eastland's home court, won by Eastland. And then in terms of the 2A matchup, how do you size up that game?
All right, so speaking about this, now I've been here all week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You just got here today, so I've seen basically everybody play in person. It's interesting you mentioned that Eastland-Hope game on, it was December 7th. Eastland won at 48-38. It was part of Eastland's shootout up in Lanark. And the thing that is funny about that, I watched that game. I was there because Rock Ridge played Seneca the game before, so I stuck around and watched that Hope Academy Eastland game. Again, it was 48-38. Eastland beat them. That's the 1A state championship game, a rematch from a game on December 7th. That, I think, will be a good game. Hope, I think, even though they lost to Eastland the first time around, is the favorite. Hope was missing one of their top players in that game against Eastland. And if you're watching the games or if you're coming down here today to watch the state finals, Hope has this point guard. He's about 5'7". Taiwan Hunter is named. He's a junior. And he is just an absolutely electric player. I mean, he is so quick. He can get to the rim even though he's only 5'7". He can shoot lights out. They're a really fun and athletic team to watch and so good on the defensive end. Their head coach is Ronnie Fields, who's like a Chicago high school basketball legend, right? He was teammates with Kevin Garnett, right, at Farragut.
I'll tell you a local story about Ronnie Fields, too.
Okay, and then we'll get to Eastland. Now, they're, of course, kind of the quasi-local team. They're really the only small-town school at the IHSA state finals this season. They're just kind of one of those teams that, especially here, we talked about them earlier. You know, they beat Pecatonica in that much talked about game on, you
still
know, the sectional final round. And I did a one-on-one interview with Tyler Zumdahl, the Eastland coach, Thursday after the semifinal. And you can listen to that online at WRMJ.com right now. But we kind of got into that just with those kids having to overcome the huge amount of like vitriol and hate they've had to deal with online since they beat Pecatonica to get to the sectional championship game. But Eastland, they're a really fun team to watch, really athletic, and we got a chance to cover them in the football season when they played Rock Ridge. in the first round. So I think Hope Academy probably a favorite in the 1A game, but I think that has the potential to be a really great game. Now, 2A is Altoff Catholic against Dyett. Altoff, I think, all season has kind of been the team that people have circled as the favorite. They're led by De'Aaron Hill Jr., who's a University of Oregon football commit, a five-star recruit. Obviously set all sorts of records in the football state championship game. I think he scored 7 touchdowns and, you know, rushed for over 500 yards in that 1A state title win for Altoff over Lena Winslow. Altoff has kind of just been on a run of excellence, really, when you talk about, you know, them winning the football state title, them winning the boys soccer state title in the fall. They were girls basketball state champions last season, a favorite to win the 2A state title today. They'll play Dyett, which is a team that was on the WRMJ airwaves twice this season. They played Rock Ridge in November and played Sherrard in January. As we mentioned earlier, Sherrard's the only Class 2A team to beat Dyett so far this season. A Chicago Public League school. The great story about Dyett is that that school closed for a year. I believe it was the 2015-2016 school year. So it was 8 or 9 school years ago. The school closed for 1 year because of low enrollment, reopened with like an arts-based focus, and has now been able to build the basketball program back up to playing for a 2A state championship. It's a public school out of the city of Chicago, so it's Dyett against Altoff in the 2A state championship game. My pick is Altoff. I think they'll probably win it. And you didn't talk about the big schools, but the 3A game is a all-Chicago Catholic League game. It's DePaul Prep, who's going for their third straight state championship. The story about them that's interesting is they were in 2A a couple of years ago, won the 2A state championship. They were a private school, though, so they had been to the state finals the year before and got third, beat Rock Ridge in the third-place game back in 2022. So with those two consecutive state tournament appearances, they were bumped to 3A, and they won the 3A state title last year after winning the 2A state title in 2023. This year, they've been to state again, now for the fourth consecutive year, so they will again be bumped up, and they'll be in 4A next year, but they're going for their third straight state championship today against Brother Rice. Those teams met in the conference season, the Chicago Catholic League, in January. Brother Rice actually beat them by a point, so a rematch there. And then the 4A game, I think, will be a ton of fun between Bennett Academy and Warren. Now, Warren has, you know, one of the top sophomores and probably top players in the state who is just an electric player. He put on a show last night. Jackson Davis, I believe his name is, but man, they were fun to watch last night. Warren was, and they've got a couple of kids that can get up and down the floor. And then I know, like, Bennett Academy is just a team that is always solid. They got a 7-footer that's a junior, and then their top senior is a kid that's going to Southern Illinois University. So they're a team to watch for sure today. I think Bennett and Warren, I think Nesto had them 1-2 preseason for 4A, so that should be a great game. I'm picking Warren. I think Bennett is the team that people are circling as the favorite, but I think Warren will win. Jackson Davis, sophomore point guard, man, he is an electric player. If you stick around all night for the 4A game, that's a game. He's a kid that is just so much fun to watch play the game. I don't think I gave a 3A pick, but I'm picking DePaul Prep. So my picks are Hope, Altoff, DePaul Prep, and then I picked Warren to save us from a clean sweep of private schools.
But to me, it sounds like the best game, the most intriguing matchup is going to be 3A.
I'm looking forward to 4A the most, though, I think.
And the Davis kid you mentioned from Gurney Warren, that's where Brandon Paul go there?
Yes.
No, Brandon Paul went there. But this Davis kid's already been offered by Illinois, right, or not?
I believe so, yeah.
So I wonder if Coach Underwood will be back at the State Farm Center today. But, you know, one of the great stories you mentioned, Ronnie Fields. And Ronnie Fields, you know, his high school pedigree, you know, when he became a pro, it was in the CBA. And his first pro game he ever played was in the Quad Cities for the Rockford Lightning.
Wow.
And we were doing the prelude game, because that's when, back in the day, there would be, during the year, several of the CBA Quad City Thunder games. There'd be high school games tipping off before the CBA game to get fans to come to the game. And Ronnie Fields, the first game he ever played in the CBA, was after a Rock Ridge Riverdale game at the the Mark of the Quad Cities is what it was called then. So I'll never. And there was a lot of anticipation about him. That was his first pro game. But then, also just one other local note. I saw this on social media. So during the 3A game, and I don't know what the two ball competition is for, like these young kids that are playing 11 and 12 year olds. They participated at the YMCA in Mercer County. Weston Swanson and Cash Cook, two Mercer County youngsters, they're going to be shooting. It says, I don't know if it's prior to the 3A game or halftime.
I think it's at halftime.
Halftime of the 3A game. I will say it's pretty cool. The names like Weston Swanson and Cash Cook. When your mom was telling me that, Ty, I'm like, that reminds me of, like, Walt, Clyde Frazier, and Earl the Pearl Monroe from the, like, 1970s.
I wanted to mention one other thing locally. Now, the collegiate softball season has got underway.
Oh, yeah, great
and
story.
And I ran into Tom Hassan down here yesterday, and he was telling me that, actually, Illinois is hosting a weekend series with Wisconsin, and Kendra Lewis, of course, Rock Ridge, great freshman year at Wisconsin, hit her first collegiate home run last night just across the street in Champaign against Illinois. So congratulations to Kendra.
She hit it onto Lincoln Avenue.
I saw the highlight on Twitter. I went to the Wisconsin page. So, that's awesome that she was able to hit her first career home run in the home state for the Badgers. That's just awesome.
All right. So speaking of that, then, spring sports, are there any potential broadcasts next week on the WRMJ airwaves yet? Or
I think we are potentially looking at maybe Tuesday and Wednesday.
All right.
We have, I think, Mercer County, Abingdon, and Avon softball potentially Tuesday.
Get ready, Murray!
I think Sherrard, Rock Island softball Wednesday, and then maybe Thursday might be a Sherrard baseball game if Illinois, depending on when they play in the NCAA tournament. So we might have three games on next week.
Isn't it crazy that we already segue into spring sports?
But speaking about Kendra Lewis, so she was the designated player for them, and she's batting fifth in their lineup.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
True freshman Kendra Lewis. Holy smokes.
Homer against the Illini.
Well,
that's awesome.
And then her doing that's such a cool story, her doing that in Champaign.
Yeah, it is awesome.
Good for her.
I know that was really cool because when I was talking to Tom Hassan, him and Katie, of course, are here this weekend, and he said he didn't even realize because, like, I would have went over and watched her play. I could have seen that in person. So, that's awesome. And Kendra obviously was an amazing talent, and we know that she'll probably do great things on the collegiate softball circuit. So I see Peyton Brown's in the middle of Western Illinois' lineup, and I think she had a home run last week, too, for the Leathernecks. So awesome, awesome, awesome. That Rock Ridge softball machine, I guess it never slows down. We'll probably talk about them maybe next week on Sportsline. So, I mean, I think we're getting ready to wrap up here from State Farm Center. It's always fun getting to do this. Second year in a row we've done this show as the 4A third-place game is kind of winding down in the third quarter now.
Can you give me one of the score sheets? I want to do a little play-by-play of that. No, just kidding.
No. But we didn't pay the $100 fee, so Matt would come back up here and rip our equipment out.
We put on double secret probation.
Right. It's just so fun, I think, coming down here. And I've had such an enjoyable week here, you know, Thursday, Friday, and into today. I'm really looking forward to the state championship games, and it's so fun to just kind of get to see everybody. Like, I've run into so many people that you see throughout the year, like on – you know, Thursday, Alex Johnson and Ethan Arroll were here from Sherrard, and Coach Johnson had his WRMJ hat on.
That's great.
And I saw Ryan Winkler here on Thursday. Princeton's boys basketball coach Jason Smith has been here all weekend, ran into him a little bit, talked to him, too. They're just, and like, you know, like the IHSA guys, like Chris Schwartz is my first time meeting him this week. Had a few great conversations with him.
Love
getting to talk to Matt Troa. Like Justice is here from the Bomber Sports Network. Got to talk to him a little bit. And it just is kind of the same people you see around all year, but it's kind of the last time you get to see him before, like, November.
Yeah.
So it just is always such a fun event to come to. And you know, I just love the IHSA boys basketball state finals. It's the best part of the high school sports calendar is this week, and I always have so much fun down here.
Do you remember last year when we ran into Ryan Winkler and his kid was with him, and we were like in one of the walkways, and
we talked for like 40 minutes,
and his kid just
walked
left.
Yeah. Yeah, Keegan is like, "Nah, I'm done with this, man.
I'm done with this." Appreciate it's fun broadcasting from here, and great to get a chance, you know, an extended conversation with Chris Schwartz. You know, again, at United for a while, and now, you know, he's overseeing the IHSA state basketball tournament. So I think that's awesome, and it's always great to, you know, visit with Matt Troja and two guys, Chris Schwarz and Matt Troja, that you know, attended Monmouth College, so I think that's a cool storyline, too, to see that.
And I want to mention one thing. One of the things that we did speak about with Matt Troja is kind of the decreased, like, traditional media coverage of, you know, interscholastic athletics and high school sports. But I know one of our great friends is Brian Roosh at WCCI. We didn't get to your segment with him this week, and sometimes we run out of time and don't always have the Jim and Brian segment on. But obviously WCCI is covering a state championship game today between Eastland and Hope Academy. They were at the first game between those teams back in December, too. So, locally, I guess you can listen, WCCIRadio.com with the great Brian Roosh, and I think...
And Mark McCumber, who played at Wisconsin Platteville.
On the dial is, what, 100.3?
Yes,
correct. Probably don't get it, though, in our area, but you can listen online. There's nothing better than the local call of a state championship game. So for the Eastland Cougars, that's WCCI out of Savannah. Brian Roosh on the play-by-play. WCCIRadio.com, our great friend on the radio,
yeah.
Brian Roosh.
Yeah, and he told me the story, you know, probably about 6 or 7 years ago about the connection with, you know, Lou Henson and Mary Henson, the wife of Lou, grew up, you know, a native of Lanark. And meeting in the summer when Lou, you know, who's a native of New Mexico, or native of Oklahoma, I should say, is working a summer job as a youngster at the Jolly Green Giant plant, and that's how they met. I think that's just such a cool story, and there's been, you know, some media attention with Mary Henson taking the basketball team out Thursday night, and then I think that yesterday they ate dinner at her house here in the Champaign-Urbana story. And then I didn't realize, so pre-consolidation, they were Lanark High School, and they're nicknamed the Beavers.
I heard him say that.
So hilarious, but they have a loyal following in Eastland. You know, they co-op football with Pearl City, a separate high school. But, you know, when I saw, you saw them playing basketball at that Eastland shootout, but, you know, just watching them play against Rock Ridge in football and kind of the body types of some of those kids, I'm like, that's probably going to be a pretty good basketball team. And lo and behold, they were a pretty good
basketball
team. I
saw them playing Riverton in basketball this season, too. They were at the Riverton shootout and played Gorville, actually lost that game in February. But yeah, they're a great-looking, you know, 1A team. But, yeah, it was great having Chris Schwarz and Matt Trohan. Interesting to see kind of what comes at IHSA board meeting today, speaking about some of the private school stuff that might be discussed.
Well, apparently something's going to come out of that, but we'll have to wait and see. But I think, you know, the one-year enrollment cycle is going to impact things. And then you mentioned to Paul Prep, they're going to be 4A next year. Crazy that they're going 2A, 3A, 4A.
And just like for our local schools on the postseason path next year, Hope Academy will be bumped up to 2A next year from 1A with their back-to-back state tournament runs. So with that, I mean, they're a team that is – underclassmen late, and their top three players are two juniors and a sophomore. So they'll be, I think, in the mix in 2A next year.
Yeah, so if our schools get then directed north, that would be a potential, like, NIU super sectional.
Right. Or Sterling.
Yeah, opponent. But we'll wait and see how all that shakes out.
Yeah, and with that, next year is a new enrollment cycle. So, and I don't know if this is the third year of the, like Chris George was talking about with the subsectional mass, but we could maybe see some shifting where, you know, it was a different sectional complex this time around for all of our local schools. Go from, you know, it used to be going north to the super sectional in Sterling. Now it was south going to Springfield. So we'll see. That obviously plays into who you run into in the sectional round. Where going south, of course, I think it's a little bit stronger.
All right, so I was going to ask you so about Althoff then today. And again, I mentioned this at the beginning of our broadcast today. I think Maroa Forsyth, the last school to go, I define small school, to win basketball and football in the same year.
Byron had a chance last year. They got third, though, in basketball.
But so I know the Hill kid, you know, the great football talent from Althoff is going to Oregon in the Big Ten. Now, I've heard, now you've seen him play in person, just a small sample size. Is he a D1 basketball player too, you think,
or not? I think
so.
High level? His quickness. Defensively, he is impressive, and he can get to the rim. I believe he's someone, I think Nesto, or no, it was Coach Ryan Miller from Pinckneyville said he was offered by Missouri to play basketball. I believe it. I mean, when you see him play today,
I'm
be like,
to
yep.
It.
I mean, his burst just on both ends of the floor and just the speed up and down the floor. Like we were talking with Matt Troar, I was on yesterday. We were talking about just watching him play. And he's like, yeah, that's a kid who's, you know, probably a professional athlete. You know, you just get to see the next level quickness and athleticism.
Can I get an interaction? I know there's at least one person listening to Sportsline.
Yeah.
I think he listens to the radio 24 hours, 7 days a week. Left-handed sharpshooter Brian Brooks.
Okay,
you,
great.
You know what he just mentioned? What'd
he say?
My 14-year-old is shooting during 4A game.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So, okay.
And you just made everybody in Benton really mad because you said Coach Weinmiller's from Pinckneyville.
Whoops. My bad.
They only
from Benton.
Him, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
they
so,
played
right.
him three
so,
times. Sorry
so we,
about that.
We got Brian Brooks's youngster shooting in that. Is it the two-man thing? That
yeah,
I'm
I would assume so. Awesome. All right.
And then.
Hopefully West, we get to see him.
And then. Man, if Weston – I hope, like, Weston and Cash are, like, elite talent basketball, and they must be if they're coming down here, because that would be a great T-shirt to get if those kids, you know, mind you, they're just, you know, what, elementary school kids now, but what a great experience. And we say, let that feed you to get here to play as a high school
right.
kid maybe down Weston and Cash. But anyway, I don't have anything else.
You need to give your picks for the four games.
I'm going just because I like local radio. This is my no. You're gonna get mad at me. This is unscientific. I'm going Eastland,
okay.
And then I'm gonna go Chicago Diet. Then I'm gonna tell everyone. Then the unofficial state champ is Sherrard.
The transitive property.
Yeah.
Yep.
3A. I'm going basketball legacy and saying DePaul Prep, and then I'm gonna default. And hope the kid will commit to going to Illinois. And then because I've gone to Six Flags over Great American Gurney.
Yeah.
And then I like Brandon Paul as a Fighting Illini who wore number, he was 13, right?
Three.
Number three. I'm going to go with, I always call him Gurney Warren because I get confused with Monmouth Warren from back in the day. So those are my
I picked Warren as well. Also, one thing before we sign off, I can confirm, and you can too, as you look up in the rafters, the Terrence Shannon Jr. jersey is right side up.
Yeah.
So.
And what a great young man by him not being mad about that just like everybody else was. And then they, hey, let's develop this upside down
the
t-shirt.
Shirts here.
And I'm going to go buy one.
Yep. So... All right, I've got nothing else to say, really. Just like I said earlier, been a great week and here in Champaign at the state tournament. And it's been another really fun, you know, winter covering high school basketball on the station. It's always kind of sad this day, the final day of the basketball season, I think.
You know, we should, next year, we should bring Rusty Dunn with us next year. I think
he
like
said
this.
He was going to be listening. When I told him on, he was in the station this week, I think like Tuesday or Wednesday, and I told him, I'm like, yeah, we're doing the show live from the state tournament again. He's like, oh, he's like, I can't wait to listen to that.
Wow. And then I hope maybe we should get Dale Jones to come down here.
Yeah, that would be great,
too. Because I think he would enjoy this experience. Yeah. And then thanks to Terry Tracy back at the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios on a Saturday morning in downtown. Alito, but just winding down the basketball season and segueing into spring sports, and you know, have a lot of local coverage coming up through the spring sports season. But again, basketball season, a really fun year with, you know, some of the great games we had on the airways, both boys and girls basketball this year, really enjoyable. And I don't think, you know, for the first time in what about probably a 15, 16 year period, we really won't have. You know, we've been blessed with some teams. Well, you know, especially with Rock Ridge with their run, and then Sherrard this year with these high expectations. Going to be kind of weird next year. We don't have those type of high expectations, but we'll see what happens. I think Orion potentially could be in the mix.
They've got the potential
to
be really, really, really good. So, yeah, but that's a ways away, I guess.
Yeah, we got baseball and softball to worry about, and hopefully we'll have some broadcasts next week. So, enjoy the games today if you're watching those. And I don't have anything else. So, Tats, we're going to go to You want to go to Papa Dell's? Is that where we want to go?
We can. I don't know. It's only 10:30. Well, we'll maybe we'll wait 11. At the end of the third place game. Yeah. Yep. So if anyone, we're going
we'll
to
make
Papa Dell's
Papa
Pizza.
Dell's.
I wish normally we see that's our – we normally – our tradition is we eat with Nesto Hoops at Papa Dell's, but he's not going to be here yet. Me, you, him, and Gary Mueller, the odd couple.
And my dad's going to call me and say, hey, can I sit in on that?
All right,
that's Ty Taylor. Great job with high school hoops all season long. And I'm Jim Taylor, Sportsline from the State Farm Center on WRMJ.
This has been Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Brought to you by Diamond Ag, your local ag retail supplier built from your local specifications with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville. Your local Country Financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, farm, or business by 6140 Running Galesburg. Your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots. And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. The preceding has been a presentation of WRMJ Sports, your high school sports voice of Western Illinois.